truth was, it broke my heart to lie to her parents. But what choice did I have? I couldn't tell them the truth. And as far as I was concerned, this was all going to be over with soon enough anyway. Taylor would be reunited with her family and friends, even if it was the last thing I ever did.
So, she never made it to your house Friday night?
Asked Detective Morrison, the taller officer with the slicked back dark hair. I shook my head. She told me she was going to stay over at Hannah's instead, I lied.
Hannah?
Richardson.
Did she give you a reason?
Well, I was planning on leaving early, and I guess she wanted to stay until the end of the dance.
Did you witness her meeting up with the other girl? Hannah Richardson, was it?
Asked Detective Jones, the other officer with the sandy blonde hair. I shook my head again and bounced a glance at her parents. I instantly regretted it. No. She was walking back inside when I last saw her. I just assumed... My voice cracked. I'm sorry, I whispered, turning back to her parents. I didn't know this would happen. If I would have known, I...
We know, sweetheart,
said Mrs. Valentine amidst a steady stream of tears. She had the same blue-gray eyes and golden hair as Taylor, though hers was pulled into a coil at the back of her head.
You couldn't have known. None of us did.
We'll get her back,
said Mr. Valentine, pushing his glasses up the bridge of his nose. Judging by the confident tone of his voice, there wasn't a single doubt in his mind.
So, you aren't sure if she ever made contact with Hannah, correct?
Continued Detective Morrison, holding a small writing pad in his hands, presumably going over his notes. Correct.
And you haven't heard from her since Friday? No texts, no phone calls, nothing?
I tried calling her, but her phone was off. That part was the truth. I must have called her a dozen times, hoping by some miracle that she still had access to her phone. It was a long shot, but I figured it was worth a try.
All right, then,
said Detective Morrison, nodding over to his partner.
I think that about covers it. We appreciate your cooperation, Miss Blackburn. If you remember anything else, please give us a call,
he said, handing me his business card. I nodded and then slipped the card into my pocket.
Send in Miss Richardson on your way out, instructed Detective Jones as he flipped through his notes again.
I made my way out of the office and into a waiting room, stained with the familiar faces of my friends and foes.
Nikki's eyes followed me across the room like two aquamarine stones hell-bent on burning holes into the back of my head, while Morgan leaned in and snickered something beside her.
You're up, Hannah, I said, walking past them as I headed straight for the first exit I could find. The crisp afternoon wind rushed up against me as I bolted through the front doors. I couldn't bear being in that building for another minute. It was stifling, suffocating. The air was too thin and the walls too close. Taylor's memory was everywhere, following me around like a ghost, hissing in my ears and gnawing at my insides. I wasn't sure how much longer I could stand the torture. I needed to put an end to this, to all of it, and get her back home where she belonged. But how? How was I going to dig us out of this? As much as it hurt to admit it, I needed help. I was in way over my head, and I had almost zero experience dealing with revenants. Certainly none that were as powerful as Angel was. I needed someone with some insight into his ways, someone with the guts to go against him. Basically, someone who was even more warped than he was. And only one person fit that bill. Without even making the decision, I started heading across town towards Huntington Manor. I told myself it was because I needed Dominic's help forming an actual plan. A plan that would require his particular brand of diabolic manipulation. But a part of me also knew it was because I didn't want to be alone. And I hated that part of me even more than I hated Dominic. 6. A Trip to the Dark Side. It was almost noon by the time I made it across town. The sun was buried deep behind a thicket of gray, swollen clouds,
apparently still refusing to grace my dimming world with its presence. I tried to recall the last time I'd felt the sun on my skin, reveled from the warmth in my bones, but it all seemed too far away to remember. Just another unreachable memory of some distant world I used to know. I looked up at the imperious mansion that sat on an acre of fog-covered land and felt my pulse quicken as memories of my prior visit resurfaced. It's different now, I told myself. I know what he is, and I can protect myself. I doused myself in the false bravado and strutted up the front steps. Knocking twice, I took a step back and bit the inside of my cheek as I waited. I was just about to turn and walk away when the door finally snapped open. Dominic stood there, wearing nothing but a fitted pair of black slacks and a haughty smile. It was as though he knew I was coming over and decided to put on the one thing that would leave me speechless. I didn't want to look, and yet the curiosity called at me like a black cat on a Halloween prowl. What a pleasant surprise, Angel. My eyes traveled north, examining the lean, angular muscles that decorated the upper half of his body. He leaned into the doorframe and smirked.
Came to enjoy the sights, did you?
I shot him a warning look. I came to see you, to talk to you about a plan.
Is that the story we're going with?
Forget it. I turned on my heel and started down the steps, grumbling. I don't know why I even bothered coming here.
Just a minute, he called, but I didn't slow down.
When words failed to call me back, he tried speaking to my mind instead.
Come back, Angel.
His voice crawled through my brain like a tickle I couldn't scratch. I stopped dead in my tracks. Get out of my head, Dominic!
Please, come inside. I'll behave, I promise.
I swiveled around to face him. The smug expression he usually wore had diminished. His eyes, normally dark and menacing, looked almost vulnerable. Lonely, even. I wasn't sure why, but for the first time in my life, I felt pity for him. I walked back up the stairs, my eyes spearing him with an unspoken warning. It was as though he heard me, because he immediately lifted his hands in the air and stepped back from the doorway, giving me proper room to enter. Where can we talk? I asked. He closed the door behind me and ticked his chin towards the den/study at the end of the hall.
After you, he said, motioning ahead.
I moved with a kind of speed and confidence that said I knew exactly what I was doing, but my heart rate was singing a different tune, and I was sure he could hear it. I sat down on the red leather sofa in front of the fireplace and took in the room around me as Dominic poured himself a drink. Floor-to-ceiling bookcases covered the back walls like wallpaper, darkening the room into a cave-like chamber. I noticed there weren't any picture frames or family portraits hanging on the walls. No throw pillows or magazines lying around. Basically nothing that would indicate people lived here. That a family lived here.
Care for a drink?
He asked, holding up his glass as he stood behind the wooden console table. I shook my head, nauseated at the sight of it.
Can I offer you something else?
He walked over to the sofa and took his seat beside me.
A juice box, perhaps?
My eyes narrowed. You're hilarious.
And you're beautiful.
His lips twisted into a grin as he reached out and caressed my cheek with the back of his knuckles. Despite his cool temperature, it was a gentle gesture that made my skin warm in a strange way. A way I didn't particularly care for. The truth was, I didn't want to respond to Dominic's touch in that way. Not in any way. I told myself it was just the lingering effects of his bite, of the falsified connection he made between us when he bit me. But I couldn't help but wonder if maybe there was something more to it. Maybe I was lonely too. Don't, Dominic. I pushed his hand away.
Are you sure, love?
He tilted his head inquisitively as his eyes poured over me like rain.
I can make the hurt go away,
he said softly, his voice a quiet promise of rapture. My cheeks flushed. I wasn't sure what that entailed, but I was certain I didn't want to find out. Whatever it was he was offering, it was poisonous, and I wanted no part of it. Just stay on your side, and I'll stay on mine.
As you please, Angel.
He pushed back into the sofa and then focused in on me like a puzzle he was trying to solve.
Does our proximity make you nervous?
No. I rose my chin to back up the lie. Of course he made me nervous. And scared, and angry, and so many other uncomfortable things I didn't yet understand. But I wasn't about to admit that to him. I just don't want you cramming up all my personal space, that's all.
If you say so.
He smirked, his dark eyes fixed on me as though they could see right through the lie. Refusing to meet his gaze, I turned my attention out the window at a small gazebo that overlooked the rose garden. There was something so warm and peaceful about it, almost as though it didn't belong here amidst the stony darkness.
My mother's garden, said Dominic, swiveling his drink.
It's beautiful, I noted. She must spend hours in there.
Once upon a time, I suppose. Now it's just the gardeners.
He stood up and moved to the fireplace. Bending down, he picked up a log and tossed it into the hearth.
I don't know why I still commission it. I should have cut it down.
What? Why would you even say that? It's perfectly beautiful right where it is. I stared back out the window at the arched trellises and imagined myself sitting there, reading a great book without a single care in the world.
It's useless.
I'm pretty sure your mother would disagree.
And I'm fairly certain she wouldn't have much to say on the matter.
He pulled out a shiny silver lighter from his pocket and kindled the wood.
Unless she's begun conversing from her grave without my knowledge.
My face blanched. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Saint Gabriel didn't tell you?
He straightened out and watched the fire for a moment before turning. The flames danced around the edges of his taut shoulders as he buried his hands in his pockets.
I was certain he would have jumped at the chance to out me as her executioner.
A darkness washed across his face, looming over his expression like an inky shadow of death. Her executioner?
In the flesh.
My heart sped off in a frenzy, banging against my ribcage like a lunatic in a padded white room.
You killed your mother?
I sputtered, my eyes darting to the nearest exit, calculating my distance to safety. His eyes followed mine to the door.
I did.
I swallowed hard, my throat as dry as cotton balls. What the hell was I thinking, coming here?
The very first thing I did upon entering this world, he continued.
A smile crept across his lips, but it lacked veracity.
I suppose you could say I've been a killer since the day I was born.
My heart sunk in my chest as the sad reality of the situation burrowed in. She died giving birth to you.
Poetic, isn't it?
He picked up his glass from the mantel and took a long, purposeful sip. That was hardly your fault, Dominic. I couldn't believe I was defending him, but it had to be said. You were just a baby.
And yet, still culpable. My father made sure to remind me of the fact every day of my life.
He walked back over to the sofa and took his seat again.
Such is the price you pay for the crime, I suppose.
Your father is a jerk, I said, before thinking twice of it. He was wrong then, and he's wrong now. He looked over at me thoughtfully, his pitch eyes tempering as he studied me.
Don't do that, Angel.
Don't do what?
Don't feel bad for me.
He leaned in closer.
Don't feel anything for me. I know what I am, and I have no reservations about it. You'd be a fool to think anything else.
I wasn't sure what to say to that. I'd always been the kind of person who believed in second chances, that everyone had redeemable qualities and deserved a fair shot. But Dominic was an anomaly. He didn't fit in with my preconceived notions of the world. He was a monster, and he made that clear to me, time and time again. And yet, here I was, feeling bad for him. It's got to be the trauma from this past week finally catching up with me, I decided. I shuddered the misplaced feelings away. Don't worry, my feelings for you haven't changed. Hatred is still pretty much at the top of the list. If you say so, Angel. But I stand by what I said, I added quietly, so that no one but the two of us could hear. He's wrong. He nodded, accepting it in whatever capacity he could. The fire crackled a quiet song as the hungry flames tore at the log like a cannibal on flesh. There was something eerily comforting about the silence, about being here with Dominic, with the devil I knew. So, about the amulet, I finally said, chasing away the spell and anything it could have stood for.
Yes, on to business. He perked up at the prospect of a new scheme. Any chance you changed your mind regarding the blonde-haired sacrifice?
No, Dominic, I said, stale and unimpressed. I didn't change my mind about letting my best friend die. He rolled his eyes as though my humanity was a nuisance to him.
Then we're going with the original plan.
Which was what? I asked, still unclear after our inconclusive conversation last night.
We kill Angel, and we get the amulet back from Romeo.
He paused momentarily.
Though not necessarily in that order, he added, extending his arm along the back of the sofa.
We kill Angel, I repeated, shocked that he was actually sticking to his harebrained idea from last night. You say that like it's actually a possibility, like he hasn't murdered generations of slayers already.
It most certainly is a possibility.
His lip pulled up on one side.
With the amulet in hand, of course.
Right, of course, I nodded, deciding to go with it for argument's sake. And remind me again how we're getting the amulet back exactly. Trace isn't just going to give it back to us. I don't even know what he wants with it in the first place, let alone where he's hiding it. Not to mention it might not even be on our timeline anymore. We need to...
Slow down, love, he cut in, halting my mouth diarrhea. One thing at a time.
Easy for him to say.
Care to explain why you suspect it's no longer on our timeline? He asked, visibly bothered by the news.
Trace said so. He swears he wasn't there that night, that it wasn't him. Just saying the words aloud made me long for them to be true.
Is that right?
He faced forward, distracted with his own sinister musings.
Interesting. Well, what do you think?
I watched him closely, gauging him for his reaction, desperately seeking out his unspoken confirmation that it might be true. He took a slow sip of his drink.
I think he's either a complete idiot or an absolute genius.
Do you think he's telling the truth? You saw him that night too, and probably a bunch of times before that, right? He picked up a loose strand of my hair and twisted it around his finger.
Indeed, I did.
Did you see anything different about him? I asked, pushing his hand away without missing a beat. Did he look like he was, I don't know, from the future?
It's hard to say. If he was from the future, it wasn't the distant future.
Great, that's no help at all.
Well, you know him better than I do, Angel. What are your instincts telling you?
They're telling me nothing. I shook my head, frustrated by my lack of information and control. All I know is he's been keeping things from me. Things about his ex-girlfriend, and some other stuff, I added, not wanting to disclose anything about Morgan's vision. Something Trace conveniently left out. If I can't trust him to be honest with me about those things, how am I supposed to trust him now?
Easy. You don't. He said simply. You assume the worst and prepare yourself for all the possible outcomes.
There were only two possible scenarios here. Either he was lying to me and he had the amulet, Or he was telling the truth, and it's in the future with an alternate version of himself. If he has the amulet, he's going to go back to the past and give it to Linley. Of that, I was sure. Why else would he want it? Either way, it's off our timeline and out of our reach.
That certainly does complicate things.
So what do we do now? Running his lean fingers along his jawline, he mulled it over.
Figuring out the amulet's whereabouts and Trace's intentions for it is the first part of the plan. You have to determine whether or not he has it, and you have to be sure.
He tipped his head in as though leaning in to tell me a secret.
That part, however, will be solely up to you.
How am I supposed to do that?
Use your feminine wiles, of course.
Get serious.
I am serious.
He flashed his teeth in a cunning way.
You need to gain his trust and make him believe you no longer care about his affront to you, that your feelings for him far outweigh his betrayal. Get as close to him as you humanely can.
I don't know if I can do that. Faking it was one thing. Being that close to Trace without hopelessly sinking right back into him was a whole different story.
The other option is to go straight for Angel, though we'd be at a great disadvantage without the amulet.
I bit the inside of my cheeks. Neither one of my options sounded appealing, though the latter seemed far more risky. Angel was old, and not the decrepit, bad hip kind of old, the experienced and powerful kind of old. And going up against him without any backup was just plain stupid. I was a lot of things, but stupid wasn't one of them. I needed the amulet. End of story. All right. I looked him dead in the eye and nodded. I'll do it. 7. Sanguinarium. Training with Gabriel was just the kind of outwardly aggressive expression I needed. In keeping with my usual ways, I decided not to tell Gabriel about what was going on. For one, I knew he would tell my sister, Tessa, and I wasn't ready to deal with the consequences of that. Not to mention, I had the nagging suspicion she wouldn't give much consideration to Taylor's life in her pursuit of reclaiming the amulet. She would look at the bigger picture, the greater good of all, and I couldn't risk her bypassing Taylor like that. Of course, I also didn't mention anything about Dominic, or how I'd spent the entire afternoon with him, hashing out the details of our plan. As far as Gabriel was concerned, or anyone else for that matter, Dominic was still my sworn enemy. Either way, this was just a temporary ceasefire until I got what I needed. As soon as I was done with this whole mess, I would be done with Dominic, too.
Concentrate, Gemma!
Gabriel stepped back, dropping his arms in frustration.
This is important. You need to understand the mechanics involved in vanquishing.
I grunted my displeasure. How the heck was I supposed to concentrate with everything that was going on?
You should listen, kid. This isn't a game of point and stick, interceded Julian, the annoying sentinel charged with overseeing my training with Gabriel.
Point and stick? My tone was riddled with ridicule. How about I point my foot and stick it up your...
Precision is key,
cut in Gabriel, ignoring both our remarks in equal parts.
And your timing is vital. Every time, or it could be your last time.
His moss-colored eyes turned hard.
Do you understand what I'm telling you?
Yes, I understand, I said, crossing my arms. I'm not stupid.
You need to be able to do this with your eyes closed and your hands tied behind your back,
he said sternly.
Instinct, preparation, muscle memory. This is what we're building on, and it's what's going to keep you alive. You have to be prepared for anything, everything, because a million things can and will go wrong out there.
I swallowed a hard lump of pride as his words sobered me. I get it. I'm sorry. I'll concentrate. His face relaxed with something that looked a lot like sympathy.
This is for your own good, Gemma. You have to learn to anticipate your opponent's next move and always stay one step ahead of them.
He straightened his back like a soldier standing his ground.
The objective is always the same,
he said, and pounded his fist into the center of his chest.
Right here.
Right, I nodded, and then finished the thought. And then what?
I beg your pardon?
What happens after you stake a revenant? I asked, curious, since my last attempt clearly didn't go as planned. Besides, if we were going up against Angel and his men, I needed to know exactly how to get the job done right this time. Do they, like, disappear in a cloud of dust like they do in the movies?
Of course not,
Julian snorted. So they just keel over and die? I asked, choosing to be the bigger person and just ignore the irritating giant.
Not exactly, said Gabriel, pushing his hand through his hair. We'll get to that eventually. All of that is secondary to you mastering your strike.
No, I want to know now, I pushed, taking a step towards him. I'm tired of all the holes and half-stories. If you want me to grow up and take this serious, then stop treating me like a child. I squared my shoulders and asked again. What happens after you stake them?
They become incapacitated,
he finally answered.
But only for as long as the stake remains in their heart. Removing it reanimates the body.
My eyes rounded out at this unexpected detail.
Incapacitation, of course, is not the end goal. While vital to the process and useful in instances of interrogation, it is simply the first step,
he continued matter-of-factly.
The objective is to vanquish them, which requires dousing the incapacitated body in cinder dust.
Cinder dust? Now we're getting somewhere. What is that, and where do I get it?
It's a synthetic element created by the High Casters, which essentially ignites upon contact with a revenant.
Like a fire?
It's slightly more colorful and substantially faster, but yes, more or less like a fire.
Okay, I nodded, absorbing the new information. So basically, the stake to the heart puts them to sleep, and the cinder dust is what makes it permanent? I verified.
Precisely.
Can't we just throw some cinder dust and be done with it? I asked, frustrated by all the extra steps. Why even bother with the stake? It seemed like a big risk to take, especially for those of us who weren't on top of our game when it came to the whole aiming thing.
The order dictates protocol. I assume it's because the Revenant's heart must first stop beating in order for the cinder dust to do what it was designed to do, though it's simply just a theory of mine. I'm not privy to all the details regarding the actual transference.
Wait, I crinkled my nose at his strange statement. Did you just say transference?
Well, a Revenant is never truly dead. Vanquishing them simply removes them from our world. A relocation, if you will. That is the true purpose of cinder dust.
You just lost me, I said, shaking my head and feeling more confused than ever.
Revenants are immortal,
answered Julian, lifting his head up from his magazine.
That means they live forever, as in they don't die.
I know what it means.
So what's the confusion, then?
He asked, sounding irritated, even though this conversation didn't involve him in the slightest.
They're immortal, not immortal until.
Revenants are indestructible, explained Gabriel.
They've always been indestructible. Because of this, the Order was forced to find a way around it, and did so with the creation of cinder dust.
He nodded into it, waiting for me to catch up.
Much like a Reaper's ability to realm jump. Cinder dust transports revenants to another realm.
So we're not actually killing vampires. We're like you hauling them out of here? I didn't like the sound of that. What if they get a return ticket?
Sanguinarium is a one-way ticket.
A strange look crossed his face.
There is no way out. No life form to feed on. No place to rest. No peace for your soul. It is eternal perdition for revenants.
I shuddered at the thought of it. Not that I had any issue with sending revenants there. They were murderous predators, void of any humanity. But what about revs like Gabriel? I couldn't stomach the thought of Gabriel being sent to perdition. So, I guess I need to be careful where I point this thing, huh? I tried to make light of the situation, but Gabriel's smile only reached halfway to his eyes.
Just stay focused on what you were created to do. Your job is to rid the world of my kind. Never hesitate.
I flinched at his self-inclusion. But you're not one of them, Gabriel. You're Anakim above all else, I said, tilting my head to the side as I tried to get him to see it my way. And you're good and kind and decent. That's a lot more than I can say about most people.
Shucks, someone get me a tissue, sniffled Julian.
Why don't you get one yourself, I snapped, whipping around to face him. And pick yourself up a muzzle while you're at it.
Gemma.
Gabriel tried to call my attention back. Why is he even here? I asked Gabriel, livid now. All he does is sit in that chair like a stupid beanstalk and make stupid comments all day.
He's here for your protection.
From what? I asked with mock laughter. From you? You would never hurt me, and besides, he'd probably let me get killed anyway. I'd had enough. Finding the patience to deal with Julian on top of everything else I had going on was becoming a job in and of itself. And I already had more than enough jobs. Gabriel pursed his lips, though I could tell he was thinking the same thing I was.
I'll talk to the Magister tomorrow. This obviously isn't a good fit.
Obviously, said Julian. You think? I spat, staring him down as though I might jump in for a round of that point-and-stick game. If the Magister had any sense at all, he would find another Sentinel to oversee our training, because the current one was two short words away from being forced to eat his own tongue. 8. Mean Girl. Fog wafted over Hollow Hills like a translucent cloud of smoke, masking our world from the outside like some cosmic barrier that sought to keep us imprisoned. I walked into Weston early the next morning, eager to get a head start on my new plan, Operation Get Close to Trace. The clock was ticking, and I desperately needed to figure out a way to put my hurt and anger towards Trace aside, if I had any chance of getting the amulet back. He was my one and only link to it, and pretty much the only lead I had. I still wasn't sure whether it was future Trace or present-day Trace who took the amulet from me. But one thing was for sure. One of them had it, and that made Trace the only one who could get it back for me. Unfortunately, my target was already there when I arrived, which consequently threw me right off my game. He was standing against his locker when I rounded the corner, his cell phone planted firmly in his hands. From the corner of my eye, I saw his head pop up as I approached, and even though my instinct was to look away from him, to avoid those storm eyes at all cost, I knew that wasn't going to help me get the amulet back. I had to get close to him again, as close as I could stand to get, and I had to do it without tipping him off. I met his curious stare and gave a meager smile, letting my eyes linger on his a while longer than they needed to. As dazzling as he was, I didn't falter. I knew my place, and I knew my plan, and I was sticking to it, no matter how good his just-showered hair looked. The seed had been planted. Reaching my locker, I tossed my school bag inside and pulled out my homeroom books just as my phone vibrated in my jacket pocket. I glanced down at the screen and saw my sister's number. Ignore. An early morning interrogation with Tessa was the last thing I needed. What if she started questioning me about the amulet? What if she suddenly wanted it back? Or worse, knew I wasn't in possession of it anymore. I wasn't even almost ready to deal with Tessa right now, and definitely not at this ungodly hour. My phone buzzed again. Voicemail. I threw the phone in my locker and shut the door. Hey, Blackburn! I jumped at the sudden sound of Caleb's voice in my ear. He placed a steadying hand on my shoulder and laughed. Sorry about that. Didn't mean to scare you. It's okay, I said, squirming back a step. I'm just a little on edge lately.
Anything I can do to help?
He flashed his pearly whites and leaned his shoulder into the locker beside mine. Unless he knew a way to get the amulet back, save Taylor, and kill a centuries-old vampire, there wasn't much he could do for me. No, but thanks for asking. I secured the lock and bounced a glance over his shoulder. Trace was still leaning against his locker, though his arms were crossed over his chest now, and he wasn't alone. Ben was standing beside him, talking his ear off, but it didn't look like Trace was paying any real attention to him since his eyes were still pinned on me. And they didn't look happy in the least.
You coming to the game tonight? Asked Caleb.
I don't think so, I said, shaking my head as I turned my attention back to him. He really had that frat boy look down pat with his crisp letterman jacket and perfectly tousled hair. I have some stuff to take care of. My eyes veered back to Trace, who was still watching me like a foreign movie he didn't understand. My heart rate picked up again. I hated that he still had an effect on me. It would be so much easier to hate him, to move on and forget him if I knew for sure that he betrayed me. At least then I'd have some resolution, some closure, and a clear conscience when I pulverized his heart the way he pulverized mine.
Maybe I can take you out sometime.
Caleb's eyes fell heavy on me.
Like on a date or something.
A date? It took a while for the word to even register. God, when did that happen? When did something as normal as a date become such a foreign concept? I don't know. I have a lot going on right now. I nearly cringed at how lame I sounded. I still have tons of homework to catch up on. I really need to stay focused, I added, hoping to lessen the sting.
Right.
He raised his chin in a nod, slow and weighty with disappointment.
Got it.
Maybe when things calm down, I offered, though we both knew that wasn't likely to happen. The way things were going, I'd probably never get a chance to go on another date again. Those kinds of things tended to take a very distant backseat when you find out vampires exist and that your sole purpose in life is to destroy them.
Yeah, maybe.
My gaze shifted over Caleb's shoulder again. Ben and Trace were both staring now, and I could see Ben's lips moving. It definitely looked like I was the topic of their discussion. I couldn't help but wonder if Ben knew the full story, if he was up to date on what was going on. I had a hard time believing he would still be talking to Trace if he knew he was partly responsible for Taylor's disappearance. Either he hadn't fessed up yet, or he really wasn't there that night. The not knowing was killing me. I needed to dig deeper into Trace's story, to disentomb his secrets and find out what the heck was really going on. There was only one place I could think of to start. Have you seen Morgan? I asked, turning back to Caleb. If anyone could provide insight into the truth, it was Morgan. She was a seer, after all. Maybe she'd, seen something. He shook his head.
Check the washrooms. That's where the girls usually hang out.
Right. I should totally know this. Thanks. Morgan was standing in front of the bathroom mirror, applying a thick coat of mascara when I walked into the girls' washroom. Luckily, Nikki appeared to be nowhere in sight, which elated me to no ends. I much preferred to have this tête-à-tête without the Ice Queen present, especially since I had the nagging suspicion that she controlled most of what her friends did and said, and I really didn't want to risk her interference. I darted across the washroom, checking under each stall to make sure no one else was in there with us. You do know how weird that looks, right? She said, looking at me through the mirror, her lash brush midair. And it's probably illegal, too. I'm just making sure we're, safe. You can never be too careful, right? I said, heading back the other way to lock the door. That mascara looks great on you, by the way. I added, my pathetic attempt to soften her up a little. I know. She blinked hard. What do you want? I need to talk to you. About what? About Trace.
Why don't you talk to Trace about Trace?
She said, pulling a tube of red lipstick out of her makeup case.
Because I need the truth, and Trace seems to have a hard time with that.
She didn't respond.
That vision you told me about at the dance, I started.
What about it?
Is it true?
I moved beside her and watched her through the mirror.
I needed to know if there was any truth to what she'd said, or if it was all part of some sick game.
Of course it's true. She tossed her red curls over her shoulder.
Why would I make that up?
I decided not to answer that question honestly. I wasn't sure how much she knew about what had happened that night after the dance.
I'm just trying to sort everything out, I said, aiming for vague.
So you saw Trace die in a vision, and it was because of me? To save me?
Pretty much.
She smacked her lips together and ran her finger along the edges, removing the excess lipstick.
To save me from what? When? And why would he do that? Why would he risk himself to save me?
Does he... Oh my God, stop. She cut in, making a face.
I'm not a fortune teller, okay? You're asking me questions I don't have answers to.
She tossed her lipstick back in the makeup case.
But you're a seer.
Yes, a seer, not an oracle. I have visions, like tiny glimpses of the future. That's it. I try to call them like I see them, but I don't always have the full picture.
I took a deep breath and tried to compose myself.
Okay, so what did you see?
I saw you. I saw Trace. I saw blood, a lot of it. I saw you pull each other in, and then a final... You know.
A final what? A final word? A final breath? A final kiss?
God damn her, I needed answers.
All of the above, more or less.
Her evasive emerald eyes flickered to me through the mirror.
Look, you told him you loved him, and then he was dead. That's what I saw, okay?
I couldn't seem to pull in enough air to fill my lungs.
When did you see this?
Right before you moved here.
Did Trace know?
She nodded.
So you guys knew I was coming here before it was even decided?
Pretty much. I wasn't yet sure how to feel about that.
Have you had any other visions?
Tons.
About me?
Some.
Can you be more specific?
No.
She swept some powdered blush across her cheekbones.
Like I said, I'm not a fortune teller.
She paused for a moment and then turned to me.
And I'm not a therapist either, so if you have relationship issues with Trace, you need to take that up with him.
I lowered my head. That's not exactly an option right now. Things are really messed up.
I'd say so.
Her gaze softened with what looked like pity as they looked me up and down. After a brief pause, she said,
Look, for what it's worth, I know he cares about you, okay? A lot.
I felt a tug at my heartstrings, a dazzling spark of hope that lit up my insides like a Christmas tree.
You had a vision about it?
No, I had a conversation about it.
She dropped her blush brush into the makeup case and tossed it into her bag.
He's my friend. I don't need a vision to know what he feels.
She grabbed her purse from the counter, draped it over her shoulder, and walked out of the washroom, leaving me spiraling with even more questions than I started out with.
9. The company you keep.
The lunch bell blared through the speakers, prompting me out of my seat so fast even Taylor would have been impressed. Tossing my books in my locker, I discarded the lunch I had no appetite for, and headed straight for the library, fully intent on hiding out among the cobwebs and books for the remainder of the hour. I may have made some progress with Trace this morning, but sitting across from him at the lunch table for the next hour wasn't a part of my plan.
Pushing through the doors, I smiled at the librarian eating her lunch at the counter, and then took off for the deepest corner of the library. Pacing slowly down the aisle, my hand swept across the book spines as I browsed the titles. I wanted to find a book to escape into, something to lose myself in for the next 60 minutes, but I wasn't sure there was one thick enough to erase my reality. Reading hadn't always been my thing. Back in Florida, I always preferred being out with friends to being alone with myself. Shopping, cheerleading practice, pep rallies, that was my thing. As superficial as it may have seemed, it filled up the silence around me, the void from my non-existent mother and my too far away sister, and I loved every minute of it. All of that changed after I watched a vampire murder my father in cold blood, and consequently landed myself in the hospital. Lucid conversations and social mixers weren't exactly an option anymore, but reading always was. It quickly became my way out, my escape from captivity. I didn't have to live inside my pain anymore. I could live inside my books, each one taking me further and further away from the barred windows that held me prisoner. I heard muffled voices at the front of the library. I peeked over a row of books and saw Trace talking to the librarian. He nodded, flashed a dimpled smile, and then arrowed his eyes in my direction. I took a hasty step back, as if I'd been caught watching something I shouldn't have seen. Composing myself, I peered back over the books at him. He was walking now, moving straight for my aisle. I snatched a random book from the shelf and flipped it open. I read two lines, something about an alpha werewolf, and tried to put it back, but it was too late. The book fumbled out of my hands as Trace rounded the corner. Our eyes met, and I swallowed hard. He glanced down at the book on the floor and then calmly walked over to me. Bending down, he picked it up, flipped it to the front cover, and then looked back up at me under dark, fanning lashes.
"Interesting choice."
The tantalizing depths of his voice sent a shiver down my spine. "I like to keep it interesting," I said, staring down at him casually as though looking into his eyes after what he'd done to me wasn't torturous in every sense of the word. He handed the book back to me and straightened out.
"So you're talking to me again?"
he asked. His voice was low, like the books were alive, and he didn't want them to hear us. Working hard to keep steady eye contact, I nodded.
"Really?"
He took a hopeful step closer.
"So you believe me, then?"
His dark brows pulled together, making his eyes look like two drops out of the bluest ocean. I tried not to get swept up in the waves. I don't know what to believe anymore. I wanted to believe Morgan. I wanted to believe him. I wanted to believe him more than I wanted to be alive, because every breath I took without him was shallow and suffocating. "I wish I could trust you again," I admitted quietly, sliding the book back in its place. I needed someone on my side, now more than ever. His jaw muscle pumped.
"I would never hurt you."
"You say that now, and maybe you even mean it. But something changes, because you did hurt me. It already happened." Visions of him walking away from me that night sliced through my mind like taunting reminders of what we'd become. I could feel my eyes well up as the burn at the back of my throat intensified. I didn't want to cry. I didn't even want to care, but it seemed to be out of my control. Seeing the agony on my face, he immediately erased the gap between us. I wanted to step back and keep the space alive, but my legs, my heart, couldn't bear the strain of separation.
"How do I fix this, Gemma?"
He lifted my chin, forcing me to look up at him.
"How do I fix something I didn't break?"
"I don't know," I said, but the truth was, I wasn't sure this could ever be fixed. Pain flashed through his eyes. "You weren't supposed to hear that," I whispered, realizing he'd been listening in. He looked away as he tried to conceal the hurt that was already written all over his elegiac face. When his gaze met mine again, his eyes were harder, more determined.
"Tell me what to do, Gemma," Tell me what I have to do to prove myself to you. Whatever you want, I'll do it.
My hands trembled as I tried to contain all the emotions funneling through me. Are you sure you mean that?
Try me,
he dared, wetting his lips. I want the truth, Trace, about everything.
I told you the truth,
he said confidently. No, I shook my head and clarified. I want to know the truth about your trips to see Linley. I want to know about the vision and about you and Nikki. I want to know all of it.
There is no me and Nikki, he affirmed, clenching his jaw. And I don't want to talk about my sister.
But you said...
Why does it matter to you?
He cut in, quick as a knife.
What does my sister have to do with us?
Everything. Nothing. I don't know, but that's the point. Maybe it's related. At the cabin, you said you were trying to find the amulet for her, I recalled.
So what?
What were you going to do with it once you found it? If you tell me what you were planning, maybe it could help us figure out where it is now. Or at least understand why your alt would want to take it. He shook his head.
I can't risk it.
But you can risk me? Feeling the hurt prickle through me, I pushed his arms down and took a step back.
Don't you get it? Involving you is risking you. It's risking all of us.
His jaw muscles popped.
I won't do that. The less you know, the better. This is the way it has to be.
You don't get to make all the decisions, Trace. You don't get to play God with my life. With Taylor's life. Anger slashed through me, firing off my mouth. I'm getting that amulet back one way or another. Either you help me get it, or stay the hell out of my way.
You won't find it.
His voice was barely a whisper, but it resonated in my ears like a gong.
Even if you figured out where it is, you can't get there.
Why not? My eyes narrowed, suspicion reigning again.
For starters, you can't time travel,
he pointed out smugly.
And secondly, if my alt went back in time to get it, that means it's now in the future. And since I can only travel backwards, you're shit out of luck.
Panic set in, making my skin crawl with unease. There has to be another way, I said, racking my brain. Maybe it's in the past again. Tessa said Linley was trying to recreate the first rising spell.
Leave it alone, Gemma.
There was a definite edge to his tone, but I wasn't about to give up that easy. That's not going to happen, Trace. I had to make him see it my way. I had to appeal to his sensibility. If Linley's the reason you wanted the amulet before, then she's probably still the reason you'd want it in the future. I glanced over the row of books to make sure we were still completely alone. We need to go back and talk to her. She might know what's going on. She might be able to help us.
That's not happening,
he cut in before I could finish pleading my case. Why not? I asked. And then it dawned on me. You're still helping her, aren't you?
She doesn't know anything,
he said, ignoring my accusation.
If she had the amulet, I would know it.
You can't expect me to just drop it. This is the only lead I have. Frustrated, I shook my head at his lack of cooperation. Taylor's still out there. Doesn't that matter to you?
Of course it matters, he said, his head dropping down a notch. Just not as much as my sister does.
My conversation with him in my bedroom came back to me. He had confessed that he would do anything to save his sister, even if that meant sacrificing innocent people. Apparently, that included Taylor and me. I needed to switch gears and get him back on my side. No one has to be left behind, Trace. If we work together, we can save them both, I said, desperate for his concession. I wasn't sure that was even a possibility, but I had to put it on the table. Taylor's life was depending on this, and I wasn't about to hold anything back. He didn't answer. So I guess you were just lying when you said you would do anything. His eyes hardened.
This isn't a game, Gemma. If the council finds out, if they even suspect anything, you'll be banished, and I'll be bound, or worse.
He took a step towards me.
Is that what you want?
No. I took a step back, but he quickly matched it.
Then stay out of it.
I can't do that. I swallowed hard as he closed the gap. You already involved me. You. Future you. Same difference.
His dimples pressed in as he tensed his jaw.
If you care about me at all, you'll tell me the truth about Linley, I said, retreating slowly down the aisle as my chest rose and fell at his mercy. You'll tell me what you know, and you'll help me get the amulet back.
And what's in it for me?
He asked, forcing me further back as he studied my face. His eyes settled on my mouth.
What do I get in return?
I swallowed the lump in my throat. What do you want?
You.
My back hit the bookshelf.
I want you, Gemma.
He grabbed the shelf on either side of me and leaned in.
All of you, just like before.
My face flushed red. I could hear my heart beating, pumping so hard I thought it might punch a hole through my chest. What about the vision? I blurted out, because it was the only thing I thought might actually slow him down.
That's my problem.
He moved in closer, so close I could feel the heat emanating from his body. It was as close to the sun as I'd gotten in weeks. Morgan told me everything.
Good for her,
he said, staring at my mouth as though he wanted to paint a portrait of it, to devour it. Why didn't you tell me?
Because I didn't think it mattered.
He shifted again, erasing any semblance of space between us.
I wasn't planning on falling in love with you.
I pushed back against the bookshelf, but there was no room left to retreat. And now? I asked, working hard to keep an even tone as I fought away the urge to wrap myself in the intoxicating scent of his spicy cologne. Where does that leave us?
Right where we are.
My lips parted, but no words came out. I knew I had more questions, more thoughts, but I couldn't seem to make enough sense of them to get anything out. And definitely not with him standing this close to me.
You're everything to me, Gemma,
he said, still staring down at my mouth.
I need you to believe me.
He moved in to kiss me, but I stopped him right before he connected. Prove it, Trace. He licked his lips, his eyes never straying from my mouth. There was a war raging behind his eyes, a battle of opposing wills, and I had no idea which side was going to win. I bit my bottom lip in anticipation. Heat flashed through his eyes like molten rock.
Fine, you win. I'll tell you everything you want to know.
When?
Tonight.
The last thing I cohesively remembered was Trace's mouth as he lowered it to mine and kissed me with the heat of 1,000 broiling volcanoes.
10. Game Changer. Trace and I met up later that evening as planned. Our steamy makeout session in the library, while a pleasant distraction, hadn't derailed me one bit. In fact, I was as determined as ever to get the amulet back and bring Taylor home. And with Trace finally willing to answer my questions, I was beginning to feel like I had an actual chance of making it happen. He had the answers I needed, and I was ready to do everything in my power to get them. I was done taking things at face value. I'd already learned my lesson the hard way, and I refused to accept anything less than full disclosure. From him, that is. On my end, I was still planning on keeping Dominic my dirty little secret for as long as I needed him to be. He was my backup plan, my safety net, and I wasn't about to screw that up for myself. Besides, chances were I'd probably need someone like Dominic on my side when it came time to square off against Angel. The last thing I wanted to do was burn that bridge. The rain had finally tapered off into a light drizzle by the time Trace and I pulled up to his house. All the lights were off, and the driveway was empty, making the house appear daunting, almost haunted, as it blended into the starless night. "Where's your dad?" I asked as I stepped out of the blue Mustang and cast a glance at him over the roof of his car.
"Business trip."
"Oh, okay, cool."
I wasn't sure it was such a great idea being here alone with Trace like this, but I couldn't seem to summon the words to object to it. Once inside, we headed straight for